Garfield, Incredibles, Cats Don't Dance, WALL-E, Molly and the Bear, the list goes on and on. Sometimes you run into greatness when you least expect it. However, consider yourself forewarned. Bob Scott, coming up next. You do me wrong and still I'm
crazy about you. The bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, and what do you think he saw? What do you think he saw? What do you think he saw? The bear climbed over the mountain. The bear climbed over the mountain. The bear climbed over the mountain. And what do you think he saw?
You have so many reasons to protect your forests. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires.
I can't get enough of that sugar crisp, sugar crisp.
Sugar bear? Oh, he'll not get my sugar crisp this time. Oh, I'll change my house into a spaceship.
What do you know? The Granny Good Witch spaceship.
I must be a million miles away from him.
Hi, Granny. Small universe.
What are you doing up here?
Just seeking the taste of 101 sweet buns, namely sugar crisp.
You'll never get my sugar crisp cereal. Never.
A little walk in space never hurt anyone.
He'll never find it here.
Sugar crisp. Honey of a snack, you know.
I know.
Tumble through sugar and honey. It tastes like 101 sweet buns. You can't get enough of that sugar crisp. See you on Earth, Granny.
You can get sugar crisp in post-treat pack, too.
Oh, cereals make breakfast a little bit better.
Hello again to another Boing podcast. This is the third one, I believe. It's been a labor of love, and I use the term labor loosely because, you know, I believe anytime you're doing something you love, it's really not labor. As was the case with the other interviews, it was very difficult for me to keep my enthusiasm under wraps here when I was talking with Bob, and especially considering how much I admired his work. The comic strip that he's got out now there, Molly and the Bear. Molly and the Bear, just by the way, you can find it if you Google it. It's in Comic Sherpa. It's a great website there that's got a bunch of comics for newcomers. And, you know, you look at it and talent always has a way of rising to the top. And there's no doubt about it. One look at Molly and the Bear and you know where this comic strip is destined. You know, it's that good. Bob won't say it, but I'll say it. It's worthy of being, you know, in the comic pages right now in your local paper, and I would say it's even worthy of, you know, beyond that. It's just phenomenal stuff, and you've got to check it out. The humor, it's so well written, and I was just so happy to be able to talk to Bob. And sometimes, you know, you see a piece of work from somebody, and you want to talk to them, and then you find out that they do. Or have done other stuff as well, and such is the case with Bob Scott. He's an extremely talented artist. It's just incredible when you talk to him about how much he's been involved with, especially Pixar, but he's done a lot of work prior to that as well. So I'm not going to waste any more time here with me rambling on, and let's get right into the interview. The very first question I did ask Bob was about his... the education that he's got, his background, and what got him really into animation in the first place. So, again, as with the others, this is a telephone interview, so the quality will be, you know, subpar as far as that audio quality goes. But it's, you know, hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I did. And, of course, it's funny how it can pick up my breathing like it's like I'm Darth Vader. I really don't breathe like that, but you'll have to bear with that. So it's just the way the audio device, the recording device, picks up the actual caller more so than the person on the receiving end. So anyway, enjoy it. I enjoy talking to Bob immensely. Here it is, the interview with Bob Scott.
And what, I guess the first question let's start out with is, what really led you to going to animation? What got you there? What started you there?
Oh, gosh, I just loved cartoons ever since I can remember. I remember Saturday morning cartoons as a kid. And, you know, back then, I was born in 1964, so, I mean, it was way before any of the technology we have today, of course, where you could tape something, watch it later. I mean, when a cartoon was on, you had to be up and watching it. So it was a big deal to me. I just something about it fascinated me. The drawings that moved, you know, just seemed magical. And how can that move? And
right.
You know, I'm sure every kid liked cartoons then. I just never grew out of it. I remember a certain age. Can't remember exactly the age, but I still liked cartoons and thinking, well, my brothers are starting to not like them quite as much, and nobody else is, but why?
Yeah, why are you still? So did
They're still great.
Well, did you grow up on the East Coast, the West Coast, or where?
I was born in Detroit. I grew up in Michigan, and Detroit area. So, you know, cartoons were on Saturday mornings, and then after school was a big deal. You know, rushing home to be able to watch Tom and Jerry and Popeye and.
Yeah,
you know, those old ones that were in syndication. So, yeah, I remember when I was real little asking my mom how cartoons are made. And I think I was watching Underdog. I just have this vivid memory. I think I was in, like, first grade or something. Mm-hmm. And asking her, and she tried to explain to me that, you know, each drawing is a little bit different. Like, she kind of, you know, knew a little bit about it, but not exactly how all the details. And I remember she went to the grocery store the next day. She said, I'm going to buy something to show you how cartoons are made. And she bought a pad of paper and explained, you know, to my brothers and I have two brothers, you know, they draw one picture and then the next one they move it just a little bit more. And
right.
And I remember I got really kind of hooked, and we would make these little stick figure flip books, you know, trying to make characters move. And I just thought that was so cool to be able to, you know, kind of understand a little bit about how it was done.
Right. So then you took an interest in, I guess you took that through high school and in your art classes in there, or did they offer anything in that? Or
no, there was nothing as far as any sort of cartooning classes or that kind of thing when I was growing up. I remember going to the library a lot. My mom was studying her, you know, in college, and sometimes she would take one of my brothers and I along to the college she was going to at night, just to, you know, just so I could go to the library. You know, they had a really nice library at the Macomb County Community College, I think was one of the ones she was going to. And I would want to check out a book on animation, you know, and there were very few of them back then.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. If you're from the same generation,
yes.
You know
yeah.
How hard it was. And they were just so precious to be able to find anything, like, you know, about Walt Disney or... you know, I'm trying to think, there was one book by, I don't know if you know this, children's book illustrator named Sid Hoff.
Oh, yes.
He was a great illustrator.
Yeah, Danny the Dinosaur.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, Sid Hoff.
I loved his drawing style because it was very cartoony. I remember as a kid I responded to that, and he had a book on how to draw, and he would explain in the book, you know, draw a circle first, then draw the eyes, then draw the nose, and stuff like that. And I remember kind of copying from that and thinking, you know, learning a lot from that at a young age, you know, or how it was done. So those books were just, like, so precious to be able to find something like that.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you're off to California. That must have been a big jump. Or did you move there prior to that, or did you just go right to school from Detroit?
Right from Detroit to CalArts. I got accepted my senior year, I believe it was. I should go back a little bit. Actually, I met a friend of mine who's in the animation industry. His name is Dan Jupe, and he is also from Michigan. I have another childhood friend named Butch Hartman who went on to create the Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, jeez. So
we actually knew each other growing up. Butch was from another neighborhood, but through a mutual friend I met him. And then I was taking an art class in high school. It was like a community center kind of a thing. I forget what it was called, but we would go there to learn about commercial art. And there was this guy who was going to a different school. You know, he knew I liked animation. He said, "You got to meet this guy, Dan Jupe. I mean, he talks about Disney all the time. That's all, you know, he's into animation and all this stuff." So through him, I met Dan. And Dan was talking about, he was a year before me, he was talking about CalArts. And Dan was just this amazing artist that I saw his stuff. Like, he was way, at that age, way beyond where I was, you know. He already had an animation, like the right kind of animation table and everything. He bought from Cartoon Color, which is this supply company in L.A. that Burbank that distributes like cell paints and vinyl, cell vinyl paint and all this stuff, paper and stuff. And so he knew about all this stuff, and he was going to go to CalArts, or he was trying to get in. And then I started looking into that. Wow, there's a school that you can really study animation. I mean, I had no idea there was something like that. It was, I think, it was either that school or the Joe Kubert School of Graphic Arts in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are the only two I knew about that had any sort of animation. So so that once I knew that, that was definitely the school I wanted to go to.
I know at some point you entered a contest for editorial cartoons. Was that like before... That was before college, correct, or was that after?
No, it was actually after. It was in 1992, so it was way later. I was already in the industry and working. Actually, I was working at Warner Brothers at the time, Warner Animation, on Bugs Bunny animation for like commercials, and there were a couple shorts that they were trying to get off the ground at that time. And I just always loved editorial cartooning as well. That's another thing that just really inspired me. I like Jeff McNally and Pat Oliphant and Mike Peters was another one. I just, the drawing and the level of draftsmanship was just very inspiring, and I wanted to try to get into editorial cartooning, even though I know very little about politics. But Mike Peters had said one time that he didn't know anything about politics either. He just knew enough to, you know, to kind of make fun of things and find connections that were funny. And so I thought, well, maybe you don't have to know that much. And so I tried. I sent out to a bunch of papers, and at this time they just weren't looking for anybody full-time as a cartoonist at any of the newspapers I had sent to. And some of them said, if you send your drawings to us, maybe we'll print them from time to time. I never went that far deep into it, but I had an animation friend who, fellow animator that I had worked at Warner Brothers, who went to live in Boston to work for an animation studio there called Olive Jar. And he ended up coming back to L.A., but at that time, he said that Boston's this real political town, and he told me there's this contest for Boston Comic News. You should send your stuff in and see what happens, and... the prize was supposed to be they were going to try to help you get syndicated. So I was lucky enough to have won, which I was really surprised. You know, I don't know how professional other people were who sent stuff. I mean, you know, I'd been working in the industry, and it, you know, so I don't really know what the competition was exactly, but nothing came of it. We sent it to the different syndicates and didn't get syndicated, and then I just kind of let that kind of go away. Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun to do and try to do.
That's really cool. Well, I made you jump ahead there. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's okay.
But so when you left, so then after you leave CalArts, then explain how you got into the actual business of animation. How did you, you know, land your first gig, and who was it with? And
sure. The first professional work in animation I ever did was for Disney, which was they had this new sort of unit called Special Projects. This would have been in like 1985, and I was still going to CalArts, and they were going to do a half hour, 22 minute short for the theaters called Sport Goofy. And they were kind of combing CalArts for people to animate on this, for young people to get a chance to freelance and do some work. And so we all went in with our portfolios, anybody who was interested, and a lot of us got to do some freelance. So that was the very first stuff that I got to do that was professional. And the film eventually got taken over by a different director and was finished up by, I think, Matt O'Callaghan was the director. And it ended up being part of a television special where they showed a bunch of the old Goofy cartoons where he, you know, how to ski and how to play soccer and all that stuff. Yeah. So I did a little bit on that, not enough to get any credit, but it was exciting to be able to try to, you know, for the first time do something professionally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That must have been neat.
Yeah.
That's cool. So then that, obviously, then now you're getting your feet wet, so then that role snowballs into something else, and then from there.
So basically, after a couple of years at CalArts, instead of going home for the summer, I thought, well, you know, I need to stay out here and try to get some work. And there were other people getting work in, you know, summer jobs at different studios at that time. DIC, which did a bunch of cartoons for TV, they did shows like, gosh, I don't know if you remember these, like the Get Along Gang, and they did the Care Bears, and
It
was all this kind of like stuff that was being done in the 80s that none of us wanted to work on. So we're like, oh, this is what we're getting into the industry for. I mean, you know, we grew up on all the Disney and Tom and Jerry, and you know, but it was work, and it was a way to get some experience. And I had a friend, Scott Gerald, who was doing stuff for the Get Along Gang, and that's while I was at school. So I did some freelance on that, doing layout drawings, you know, taking the storyboards and redrawing the character poses to be sent to, I think they sent it to Korea. I don't know, they'd send the stuff all over to be animated. So it was like little freelance things like that, and then there was one summer that I stayed in L.A., and I worked on the Muppet Babies for Marvel. Some friends at CalArts were working there, and so another friend and I, we showed our portfolios and got a summer job working on that, and then went back to CalArts, and then so it was kind of getting, you know, your feet wet with some summer jobs and freelance. And I worked on American Tail doing assistant work, you know, cleanup work on that for part of a summer, and so all that stuff kind of helped you know, kind of get your portfolio and get you know, get some real experience.
That's great. That sounds excellent. Yeah. So at one point you had mentioned, I know you and I talked a little bit, you know, prior to this, and you'd worked with Jim Davis.
Exactly, yes.
And now, was this during this time period, or was this a little bit after, or?
This was about 1986, so okay. I was almost finished with CalArts, you know, it was my last year there, and I was working, I was done with CalArts. I was working at Marvel Productions, and working on My Little Pony, of all things.
That's cool, yeah.
Yeah, at one time there were some people like Tony Fucilli, who's like a good friend of mine, he's like one of the best animators in the industry. He was working on My Little Pony, and Kirk Wise, who directed Beauty and the Beast, was on My Little Pony. And like all these, you know, that was all the work that was there, but it's just funny to think of some of these people that went on to do, who are so talented that did this great stuff starting there. But so anyways, I was working there, and a friend of mine named Brett Koth was also working there. And somebody came through and said, hey, does anybody want a job for working for Jim Davis, assisting his new comic strip, U.S. Acres? And we're like, Jim Davis, you mean the Garfield guy? And I think my friend Brett and I were the only two people who were interested. Like, nobody really wanted to move to Indiana, and nobody was into comic strips as much as we were.
Right.
And so I talked to my wife, who's my fiance at the time, who's also an animator. I mean, that's who I met at CalArts, and she's worked on a number of things too. I told her about this opportunity, and I said, what do you think? I mean, this might be a chance to break into comic strips by being an assistant for a cartoonist who is established. And, you know, Garfield was, this was, like I said, 1985, 86 was like the biggest thing there was in comics, you know.
Right, it was peak. That was Garfield
was.
Yeah,
it was huge. And so both myself and Brett Koth showed our portfolio. She thought it sounded great. Let's like at least explore it. showed our portfolios to Phil Roman of Film Roman. He had his studio that did the Garfield animation.
Yeah.
It was there in Toluca Lake, and I think we were the only two people in L.A. I don't know who else knew about this, or, you know, I don't know, word didn't, I don't even know how this one guy found out about it, but anyways, we showed our stuff, and it was great. I remember him faxing it to Jim Davis, and, you know, we were both standing there while he went through our portfolio. He said, this stuff looks good. You know, Jim's the guy, though. See if he's interested. And then both him and I both got calls to fly out to Muncie. And so he flew all of us out, Brett Koth, myself, my wife, and Brett's wife.
Oh, jeez.
And for a big interview in Indiana.
Wow.
So it was like 2 or 3 days out there in Muncie, and we got to see the studio, and everybody was great. He was so nice. And at that point, we thought, well, he only wants one person, so we're thinking one of us is not going to get the job.
Right.
He decided to hire both of us.
Oh.
So we were thrilled. I mean, it was like, wow, we're going to get to, you know, work here and work on real comic strips. And Gary Barker was the guy who was drawing Garfield, ghosting Garfield and U.S. Acres. So he was doing the blue lining for both those strips. And he was just overworked and really needed, you know, they really needed help. I mean, he was just working all kinds of hours to do this. So he was happy to have somebody who was going to be able to take that over. And then, so anyways, everything worked out great. We got to move out there. My wife eventually got hired on the Garfield merchandise. She did a lot of blue line artwork for, you know, you name it, anything with Garfield on it. I mean, I think every once in a while we'll still see drawings that she did used again and from clip art.
Wow.
So, yeah, coloring books and children's books. And so she did mostly that kind of stuff. I did a little bit of that, but it was Brett and myself who drew the U.S. Acres strip, which Gary had designed the characters for. And then slowly Jim let us kind of, you know, put our own take on it, our own style, within the realm of what it was.
Right.
I mean,
right.
We couldn't change it, obviously, completely the way we would draw, but it was a great experience. Oh, my wife actually inked the strip for a while, too. She was one of the inkers.
Holy cow.
So, yeah.
It's a family affair. This is great.
Exactly. Yeah. I know, our desks were right next to each other. My first full-time job and her first full-time job, and it was a bullpen. It was a bullpen. It was a great group of people, and it was fun, and it was a good experience. I mean, I feel like I learned a lot just drawing a strip every day, even though I didn't draw all of it. I mean, Brett and I would share the duties of drawing it, and then my wife was inking it, and then she went on to doing the blue lining for the merchandise, and then there's another guy who inked it for a while, and yeah, it was great. I was there for 3 years. I drew the strip for a while, and then eventually I moved into the animation there. Jim wanted to do more animation, actually, in Indiana, so there were some of the Garfield specials that we worked on. There was a couple other animators. I actually work with them at Pixar now, Doug Frankel and Ralph Eggleston, who came out to Indiana, and we did some of the Garfield specials, like Garfield's Nine Lives. And so it was a really good experience.
Yeah, it sounds like
being able
it.
To do all that, you know, and I was 21 at the time. And,
oh, jeez.
You know, so.
Yeah. It's a dream, you know.
Yeah, I think back on it now, I don't think I appreciated it as much as I should have. I mean, I was happy to be there, but, you know, I was at that age where it's like I just, you know, it was hard to stay in one place. I wanted to do more and wanted to try new things. And, you know, when I wasn't animating, I was missing animation. I was just doing the strips, and if I was just animating, I was missing doing comic strip stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, it was hard to find that balance. But yeah,
that's great. You're living the dream there. So, if we roll forward to '99, it's a big leap. But you start your career at Pixar. Now, how did that happen, and how did that all begin?
Well, Pixar. I remember when they were much smaller, and I think it would have been I'm thinking it's got to be like 1991, I think. A friend of mine, Andrew Stanton, who went on to direct Finding Nemo and WALL-E, he was a friend of ours that I went to Cal Arts with. I remember I was working on Ferngully, which was a feature animated film for Croyer Films, which was released by 20th Century Fox. I don't even know if you'd remember it.
Oh, yeah, Ferngully,
okay.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, I animated on that, and at that time, Andrew, I'd gotten this opportunity to go work at this place called Pixar. And they were at that time just doing television commercials. And I remember working on Ferngully, and he came back. He'd been up there for like 6 months or something, and he showed us a reel of what he'd been working on. There was a Listerine commercial he directed, and some Lifesaver commercials I think he had animated on and stuff like that. And at that time, you know, really wasn't interested in anything with computers. I just really enjoyed just drawing, and it was, you know, wow, that stuff looks really cool. And I was impressed with the fact they were getting things that were personality-driven in their animation, you know. I mean, making like the Luxo short, you know, just this lamp, making it completely a character and coming to life and not just an object that's just moving, but it has an actual personality. So right. I was definitely impressed with what he was doing. And then, you know, as Pixar started to grow, it wasn't really till Toy Story that I realized, you know, like, wow, this is really amazing. Like, they're doing something, you know, that's just a brand new, you know, putting character animation in the same principles of 2D animation like the old Disney films in the computer. And I remember seeing Toy Story. I was working on Cats Don't Dance at the time. I was animating on that feature. And just walking out of the theater and everybody just kind of going, wow, this is amazing. This looks like the future of animation.
Yep,
you know?
Yep.
I
did the same. Went through the same thing. You walked out of there like, this is big, you know?
Yeah.
Toy Story was the one, I think, that made a lot of people kind of like scratch their heads like, wow, you know?
Yeah, because the story was so good. I mean, it was funny, and it was so different for the time as well, as you know, because, you know, things like, I think Pocahontas had come out at that time, or around that time, I forget. But it was like such a big difference between Pocahontas and Toy Story. It's like, wow, this is the kind of stuff that I think Walt Disney would be making. And it felt very contemporary. You know, there weren't songs in it. Maybe there were a few songs, but it wasn't a musical. It wasn't the formula of the...
Right.
Of what was being done at that time. I mean, although Disney was doing great stuff, too, it was just so different. But still wasn't interested necessarily going up there. I mean, it was kind of in the back of my mind. I remember Andrew, actually, I should step back. When I was at Ferngully, I remember Andrew saying, hey, you should come up here, you know. And I remember at that time not being interested in moving so far away from L.A., you know, like, well, I don't know the Bay Area that well. I don't know. Would I like it? It's one studio in town, and, you know, having worked for Paws Incorporated, which is Jim Davis's company, I knew what it was like to be in sort of a one-horse town, you know. It's like, well, you don't have as many options, you know. If that job doesn't work out and you get laid off or something, there's that fear of, like, well, I got to move again. But it was around the time, Turner, after Cats Don't Dance, I ended up working for DreamWorks. And there was a story artist who I'd worked with on Cats Don't Dance, Jill Colton, who was on Monsters Incorporated here in the Bay Area at Pixar. And she would call every once in a while, hey, this place is great. You'd love it up here. And so eventually we took a trip up there, my wife and I and our kids, and visited the studio, and I knew Pete Docter as well. I mean, you know, just kind of talked about, you know, whether I'd want to come up here or not, or if there even is a job for me. And, so then one thing led to another, and the next thing I knew, I was coming up for an official interview, and I was made an offer, and I ended up starting on Monsters Incorporated in 99 in the story department. Because even then, I still wasn't sure. I don't know if I want to do computers, and I thought story would be really challenging, and I'd still get to draw. And that was the beginning of my career at Pixar.
Wow, that's really... Yeah, Monsters, Inc. was great. God, I love that movie. That was great. But, you know, it's funny, you were talking about Toy Story. You know what was really cool, kind of a takeaway from me from that movie, was I was kind of in the boat you were in. It's like, you know, I was kind of one of those... Yeah, computers are great, but, you know, it's just not, I don't know, I just wasn't that excited about it, really. You know, it just was more of a hands-on 2D kind of a thing, you know. But when I saw do you remember the Army Men, the toy soldiers?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They looked so good. I'm like, that is so good. I was so impressed with that.
Yeah.
I said, now that's where I could see at that time I was thinking, well, that's where I could see the 3D computer stuff really shining, because it looked really good with that plastic kind of texture, you know, that,
yeah.
you know, and I just wasn't impressed yet with the warm and fuzziness yet. I mean, it's like everything looked cold and, you know, shiny, more or less, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it just,
yeah.
And so when I saw the soldiers, I go, oh, now that is a great use for, you know, computer-aided graphics. That's perfect, you know, but
yeah,
that was such a great movie. That was just really cool, great story.
Yeah, I agree, and the humor and the story, and, I mean, I hand it to John Lasseter, who he really saw the potential of computer animation way back on, I forget what the Disney film is, Tron. I think he always tells the story of, like, that's the one that when he was at Disney working on Fox and the Hound, he saw some tests for that, and just was like, he saw the potential, you know, like he just really knew.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess that's what people like that, they see beyond just what it is now, like, hey, I could do something with this.
Well, so, do you remember, yeah. there was a TV series, I don't know if you remember this, you may not, but
okay.
there was a series, and I loved it, it was called Bump in the Night.
Oh, yeah, I do know the show.
Yeah,
I know
was
somebody
like,
who worked on it, yeah.
Oh, it was really, really, that was a good use of 3D for like a series, for series TV, and I thought, oh, no, that was really cool. That was just great, great little stories, and, you know, it was just, I don't know, I just remember that. And then it was gone. What, it was gone like after one season or two seasons?
I think so. I remember the show. I didn't watch it very much, but I do remember seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really neat. So now, a typical day for you then at Pixar, like now, what is that? What does it entail?
Well, now I'm working on the computer. I was in story for about 3 years, a year on Monsters and then 2 years on The Incredibles doing storyboarding. And around the time of The Incredibles is when I was kind of more inspired to try the computer. There were more people from a traditional background who were taking the chance to do it. I mean, there had been in the past, but like my real good friend Tony Fucilli had come up to work on it, and he was going to work on the computer, and you know, people like that. A friend of mine named Doug Frankel, you know, who I worked with in Indiana. You know, and I thought, well, maybe I should try this. This looks really cool. I mean, Tony's designs and it's kind of a 2D sensibility with the human characters and stuff. So I was real inspired to try to learn it. So anyway, so now I'm on the computer. So it's just a new tool to animate with. But I guess a typical day would be, depending on what I'm working on. Would be to, you know, just mostly animating the scene that I'm working on for whatever film it is. And usually you get your shot, you have a shot briefing, you know, and you'll get your handoff on what you're going to be animating, and the director will explain the acting in that scene, or you'll watch the whole sequence, so you're really familiar with what is going to be happening in that sequence. And then it's off to, you know, to animate on the computer, opening up your shot and you've got your 3D model in there and starting to move it around and you know, try to bring a performance in there, try to act. Sometimes I'll thumbnail. You know, we have an acting room there that people use where you can act things out. It has a video camera. It's a small room. You can just go in there. It has all these mirrors, and you can act something out if you need to, if it's a physical action that you just need to see how somebody would do something so it seems believable, even though
right.
you're going to caricature it. So, yeah. I'm trying to think of how else to describe it.
Well,
basically, it's the same thing I've always done in animation, which is to try to bring something to life, but now I'm doing it with a puppet inside the computer, you know, instead of actually drawing it, so.
Right.
Yeah.
That's neat. So now you have kids, right?
Yes.
You have children?
Yes.
Okay. So what is it like, do you, like, when you guys go to the movies?
Yeah.
Do you look at it as, like, are you involved when you watch it, like, you're looking for flaws or mistakes, or do you look at it as a fan or watch it as a more of a fan and enjoy it for that?
Well, I think you know? The Pixar movies, because the people there are just, I mean, just so incredibly talented, and they go over every story with such a fine-tooth comb and, you know, try everything to make it work, that I go to the screenings of films I worked on. I don't really even feel like I worked on it hardly, because I mean, it's kind of funny because, you know, you're looking at your character on your computer screen. It's not all rendered and everything, and, you know, it's not finished. Like, if you're animating Bob in The Incredibles, you know, he's just, like, in leotards on your screen. There's no clothing. All that is simulated later. So all the lighting and the music and everything, you really feel like you're seeing it fresh and for the first time. We have a wrap party. I mean, we, you know, usually everyone walks out like, wow, that really came together. And, you know, because you're really picky as you're working on it. But when you finally see it on the screen, you kind of relax and then enjoy the film. And, I mean, the directors there and the writers and story people are just so amazing that they always, I don't know, it just seems like they always are able to pull it off. I mean, I'm in awe of what they what they do. Yeah, it's not like other films I may have worked on in the past, where at other studios, where maybe you see more of the mistakes, you're conscious of that because the film didn't maybe turn out as well as you had hoped it would. But at Pixar, they always seem to turn out better than you expected. Even it's a pretty amazing environment there.
That's really neat. So the so now you're. But your kids are aware then that you were involved in.
Oh yeah, they're older now. My daughter's 17.
Oh, okay.
Going to be 18 soon, our son is just turned 16. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when they were real little, I mean, I think it was just something that, you know, mom drew, I drew. When we were in L.A., most of our friends were in animation. You know, we moved to the Bay Area, and they were kind of surprised that there were people who didn't draw for a living. They were kind of used to everybody works on cartoons.
Wow. Now, do they have any interest in you know, cartooning or animation?
Well, my son draws incredibly well. He's really a really good artist. He draws manga style or manga. He corrects me all the time. I'll say manga, and he's like, it's manga. You know?
Yeah.
So he can draw that style really, really well. And our daughter is actually she's going to USC for film school.
Jeez.
So in August she'll be going there, and so she's really taken to filmmaking in a big way. I mean, she's always been a really talented writer, you know, writing short stories when she was younger. She was in some special writing programs, like summer writing programs, because the teachers always knew she was gifted. And it wasn't until, I don't know what year it came out, but there was a movie, Match Point, the Woody Allen film.
Mm-hmm.
I took her to see that movie, and it's like the light bulb went on. Like, she was old enough to finally see an R-rated movie. And she just saw film for the first time. It's like, wow, this is beyond, you know, Herbie the Love Bug or something.
Yeah.
You know, kiddie kind of film. It's like, this is a real film. And just something kind of clicked. She got inspired to want to write her own screenplay, and started reading books about it and everything. So she's similar to myself in the sense that she has known what she's wanted to do from a young age for a long time. Son, who knows where he'll, you know, he's really into sports right now and cross country and running, but he draws really well. So I don't know. Video games, of course, like every kid his age are probably into.
Yes, yes.
That's another thing, so.
Yeah. Well,
hard to say, yeah.
Yes. So now you're at Pixar. Then now this is my favorite part of the whole interview, because we're talking about Molly and the Bear. So you've got a comic strip running at Comic Sherpa.
Yes.
And it's called Molly and the Bear. Now, how did that come about? From, I know, obviously you still had that love for doing comic strips, or
right.
Is that what that was? And you just decided to try that, or? Because it's fantastic. I mean, I just love it. So,
thank you.
I'm just really curious to know how that evolved.
Well, the characters, Molly the Bear, I had the idea for this strip going as far back as, years ago, way before I even came up to Pixar, believe it or not. And I've always liked, for some reason, drawing bears. I don't know, going way back to CalArts, or, you know, I would just draw kind of different cartoony bears in my sketchbook, you know, when you're practicing drawing or whatever, you just make up characters. I'd always draw different bears. But then there was this one bear that I drew, which ended up being Bear, that we were trying to think of some murals for my daughter's room when she was real little. We were going to paint some stuff in her room. I actually never ended up painting this, but I had drawn this bear sitting in this car, kind of driving around in a little tiny car, like a bumper car in an amusement park or something. And I remember my wife always liked that character, and it was in my portfolio for a long time. And anyhow, that character ended up being part of another strip I was working on for a while, where it was going to be two bears trying to escape the zoo. I think the name of the strip was Please Don't Feed the Bears or something. And they were going to escape the zoo and live in the real world, you know, get an apartment and get jobs to see what it was like to live amongst the humans. And so that was the idea for a while. I did a lot of writing. I never did any finished strips on that. But then one day I was kind of drawing my daughter when she was little. And I don't know if it was just by accident or, you know, there was a drawing of the bear and then the drawing of my daughter that, you know, as a cartoon character that, you know, just made me think, oh, what about a little girl and a bear, you know? And then it kind of started coming together, and I don't even know where it came from, but I just had this idea of the bear, like, what if this bear was very afraid of the world and scared of everything, and didn't really understand the world, and here was this little girl that was actually the opposite, almost more the parent than the, and the bear was more like the child.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then I started drawing those up to try to, you know, get syndicated. I mean, for years I've tried to get syndicated, you know, sending strips out and getting rejection letters, and I think there was a good like 10 years where I stopped working on comic strips altogether because I just couldn't, you know, well, the kids were little too, and it was also, you know, oh, this is never going to happen, I'm never going to get syndicated, this is impossible, you know, all the rejection and everything. But then I finally got inspired to do some again, and that was Molly and the Bear, and that's, I started sending those out, and didn't go anywhere. I had one syndicate, I think it might have been the LA Times, that actually wrote back and said they liked it, but asked me to, what about changing the bear to a dog?
Oh, because, no.
Yeah, kids don't have pet bears, so that was his reasoning.
Oh.
So, yeah.
God.
So I tried it, I called it Molly and the Dog, and I sent it out, not finished artwork, but just rough thumbnails, and they ended up passing on it, but needless to say, I thought it would be still be better as a bear, so
yeah.
So I went back to that. But it wasn't till almost a year ago that I found out about Comic Sherpa. I think it was a friend at work had mentioned that he had heard about this site and he knew I did comic strips. He said, "Have you ever thought of putting your stuff on there?" And I looked it up. I said, "Wow, this is great! You just, you know, pay a fee and you put your strips up there and you get feedback and you know, it's kind of like you're syndicated in a way because people are reading it every day."
Right.
And so at first I didn't put up Molly and the Bear. There was another strip I had, which was based on a student film I had done at Cal Arts years ago. It's called Myron, and this character was a character that I did a comic strip of back in the 80s when I was going to Cal Arts for the Newhall Signal, which was the local paper in Valencia. I took my stuff into them, the strip I was doing at the time, which was Myron, and they printed two Myrons a week for, I think, like $5 a week or something. I would get paid. The money didn't mean anything. It was just the experience of getting something in print.
Sure. Yeah.
But I had such a backlog of those, and I had even had explored that character again every once in a while. So I put those up there for about 6 months, and then I was kind of running out of those strips, and I thought, you know, I don't have as many of the Molly and the Bears, but I should put those up. And that started I started getting some nice feedback, and friends who saw it seemed to like this one better, and things just felt right with these characters, so I'm glad I switched to these because I feel like it's a stronger premise and I have more fun drawing it. Like I said, I always like to draw bears, so it's fun drawing animal characters.
You know, it's funny, when I first saw it, I looked at it and just looking at the art, I said, this guy obviously at some point in his life he's been in animation.
Oh, I mean, wow, okay.
Yeah, it just screams animator, and it's just so easy on the eyes, you know what I mean? It's just really attractive just to look at before you even start reading it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, it is really fun. It's a fun read, let alone, it, you know, just looking at it is great. But I love the, and I had to bring this up because I think it was not this last week, but the week before,
uh-huh.
You had a little story arc on the baking of the cake.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
That's and the one, I think it's the second to last, it was a Friday or a Thursday, you had him, the bear just breaks down crying then because uh-huh. he ate the frosting. I started laughing so hard.
Oh, good. I'm
yeah,
glad.
I love you. Just love the art on that, you know.
Oh, thank you.
And the frosting on his mouth and all that. This is hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
But, yeah, so.
Yeah, I think, I'm always going to be a product of being an animator because that's my training and what I first fell in love with. So I'm glad that shows. I mean, because I love animation too, so.
Yeah, no, it's great. It really, it's like you kind of look at it and you really, at least in my case, I look at it and I feel like I could be watching, you know, like a Saturday morning cartoon, you know,
uh-huh.
that I'm looking at it, like maybe a storyboard from that because it's just, you know, that neat, you know, it moves that much to me.
Oh, you know, well, thank you.
It's just, it's great. And the humor is hilarious. I mean, the writing's hilarious. It's just, oh. you know, it's
well,
funny.
Thank you very much.
You know, now I do think it's too bad that Paul Lynn's dead because he'd be a great voice actor for the father. I mean,
I remember you telling me that. That's funny. I'd completely forgotten about him until you mentioned that. I remember he was, seemed like he did a lot of voices for cartoons too.
He sure did. He sure did. Yeah.
Yeah, he was big back then.
That was fun. He just has that voice, and I'm looking at that going, God, it'd be the perfect voice for that for the dad, you know. It's just great. But anyway, but,
well, thank you. I was terrified at putting the stuff up there the first time because it's not like working for somebody or working for Jim Davis. It was like, wow, my name's going to be on this every day and... I don't know, I went through a period for a long time where I just kind of lost my confidence, I think, because of all the rejection letters. I just thought, I can't even read the comics anymore. I mean, it's too depressing because you know, I'm never going to be able to do this. And whether I ever get syndicated or not, at least I'm, you know, the fact that there's an internet now and there's this site, or even if there isn't Comic Sherpa, I mean, people can put their stuff up there. I think it's just great because it's just a nice outlet to be able to put it up there and just for the joy of doing it and not thinking so much about just getting syndicated. Because that was the big thing. You'd work so hard on a submission.
Right.
And I'm sure if you've done this comics too, you know what that's like to get right. that rejection letter. And years ago when there weren't these outlets, you just were going to have to... just suck it up and go, well, I can't do anything with this. But at least now you can at least put it out there and feel like you're you know, actually being published. I don't know what the secret is.
It's weird because you look in the papers, and I don't want to sound like just one of those, you know, babies that, because I didn't get syndicated. But you look in there
right.
like going, come on. You know, some of this is, you know, I don't want to say it now, but you know what I'm talking about. And you're just like, come on. And now the papers are dying right and left, and you're like, you know, what's going to happen to that whole industry, you know?
I know. It kills me because I still like to read print media. I mean, I mean the internet is great, and I'm so happy and feel fortunate that it's out there for myself and anybody to put their stuff out there. But just being able to discover something in the newspaper... And whether you like it at first or not, you might start reading it every day because it's there, and then eventually it you might get hooked on it and find out that, hey, this is actually really good.
Right.
Like, you know, in the old days, and now with the internet, people have to discover you. You know, they have to seek you out. It has to be somebody who's a comic fan who maybe goes to Comic Sherpa and checks out the strips by people who aren't syndicated.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what the future is. I don't know how big a strip could even get today. You know, I it's hard to say. I don't know. I guess there's some web comics that have done really, really well.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and then I've also heard like the flip side of that is, you know, how are they what are they calling really well? You know, and
yeah.
What's really well for somebody may not be for somebody else, you know. I mean, can you really raise a family with that? You know, that, I don't know. I'm the same boat you're in, and just kind of like, I'm one of those, I mean, I think the Kindle and all that stuff, that's great, but I want to hold something and turn a page, and it needs to be tangible that I can, you know, grab it You know, and I keep thinking, why can they not come up with some kind of paper that's like, that feels like paper and can bend like paper, and it's, but it's digital, and then maybe you've, you know, wirelessly every morning you subscribe and it updates that same, those same papers with new news, and then you have your news for the next day, and you can still turn it and flip it and roll it up.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You know, so that you just, you pay for the subscription still, but either through your phone line or wirelessly of whatever you've got at home, and then it'll update your news for the following morning, and it's right there on this digital, you know, tablet of like 5 or 6 sheets or something. I don't know, but
yeah, there might be something like that in the works. You know, I mean, that sounds like a great compromise where you still feel like you're getting something in paper, but it's actually digital. Yeah, because I loved the Peanuts books as a kid. You know, being able to read through an entire book, like you'd read it in the paper, but it was great to just have an entire book of all the strips. Or like in college, I could not wait for each Bloom County book when it came out. I mean, I just was like, I was such a nut for that strip. I just thought it was brilliant. And I wonder if anything can get that much exposure anymore. I don't know. I think I'd read an interview once where Charles Schulz, because he didn't start out in a lot of papers with Peanuts, and it took a long time for it to catch on, and of course it evolved, and you know, the original wasn't what it became, although I think the original Peanuts is brilliant, just as brilliant as the later ones, just in a different way.
Right.
But you wonder if somebody like that could, you know, in today's climate, would he get discovered? I don't know. I mean, you would think he would. He's so great that somebody would have seen what a genius he was. But I think he said in the interview that, you know, they took a long time to let his strip grow, and I think in the 80s, you know, strips would be canceled pretty quickly, and probably even today if it didn't do very well.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't get the chance. So you just think of all these great cartoonists that you think, wow, would if Hank Ketchum have made it with a, you know?
Yes, I know.
The way things are now, or you, I mean, yeah. Obviously the guy's a genius, so he would have made it somehow. But
yeah, but you do wonder, I mean, in a lot of these web cartoonists, you know, these web comic guys, and you really sit down and you talk to them, And you talk dollars and cents, and you say, okay, you're basically giving away the milk for free, your art's for free, which then somehow still bothers me. But anyway, it's like, okay, where are you making your money? Oh, and then they'll say, well, I'm making it on my compilations on my books. You know, I'll do like the season, whatever, year one, whatever, volume one. Well, there you go. Now it's back to print, making the money again. You know,
yeah,
so
that's interesting. Yeah.
It's like, so you're saying that, you know, it's this web versus print thing, but yet you're making all your money off print, but you're not, you're, you know, I don't know.
I have no clue how to make money off of any of this right now. I mean, I guess the print, you know, self-publishing, which is something, you know, at some point I'd like to do just to have it in print, even if nobody buys it, just to be able to open up a book and like, there they are.
I heard Molly and the Bear is going to be in print at some point. Is that true, though?
It is true, yeah. Actually, that was what got me on. I forgot. We could probably back up because that's actually what started the whole comic Sherpa thing, too. Was so they do this book. They're going to do the third one. There's a group of artists at Pixar that self-publish their own comic books and graphic novels and that. I mean, there's a lot of people that do that on the side, like Ronnie Del Carmen and Scott Morris and Ted Mathot and a bunch of story guys, and they put together Afterworks. The first one was published by, I believe it was published by Image. They brought their stuff to them. Basically, the idea was the type of work that the Pixar artists do on their own after work.
Right.
Thus the name. And each person who wants to be a part of this, who's an artist at Pixar, can submit something like, you know, a certain number of pages, like 12, 15 pages or whatever. I can't remember what the minimum is, or the maximum, and so they did the first one. It did pretty well, and then they did the second one. More artists got involved with that one. It was bigger. It was in color, and there's some really interesting stuff in there because it's really cool to see what all of these artists do at night or do on their own or their own style or their own kind of thing. And so the third one, which was actually supposed to be out this year, I thought, you know, I'm finally going to do it. You know, I was afraid to do it. I thought, you know, I don't know, putting it out there, how's it, are people going to like it or whatever? But I thought, finally, okay, I'm going to do it. I got up enough guts to do it. And then it's been delayed, so it's going to be next year, hopefully.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be the third volume. And so Molly and the Bear will have like 15 pages in there of strips. And so that's actually what sort of started it, because I kind of got over that hump of sort of being afraid to put myself out there. They put together a website, kind of Scott Morris had put it together, sort of doing little previews of what was going to be in the Afterworks 3. And seeing the strip on the web and actually like, okay, I did it. It's up there. People can see it now. It's like if they like it or not or whatever, they can judge it. Kind of got me over that fear a little bit. And I thought, even when I heard about the Comic Sherpa thing and that Afterworks was kind of delayed, because once I decided to do the Afterworks, I got kind of excited that, wow, it's going to be in print, you know, it'll be published. And that got me to wanting to put them out there. So,
sure.
But so hopefully next year it'll be out. And people got really busy. A lot of people had their stuff done, but their other artists weren't ready, and they thought, you know, next year would be better to put it together. So the guys who kind of put it together, Ted Mathod and Scott Morris, are like super busy this year on some of the projects they're working on. So hopefully next year, and that'll be the first time it'll be in print. And what's great about the whole Afterworks thing is not having to do all the work of trying to self-publish your own thing, and it's all rests on you. It's a group effort, and you're part of other artists, and so it's kind of like dipping your toe in the self-publishing without having to dive all the way in. And
so, yeah, I hear you.
You know, test it and stuff. So
that's
so
great.
Yeah, so that's how that came about. You should look at some of the other artists who did some of the other Afterworks things from the previous issues. There's some really nice stuff in there.
I bet. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, now for my favorite part, which is the tools and everything that you do.
Yeah.
Now, take us through the process of, like, just from start to finish, you know, for one strip. And as far as the tools you use, and how does that work for you?
Sure. I basically do everything the way I've always done it, which is completely old school, you know, still pencil to paper and brush and ink and India ink and white out and everything like that. So, I draw on a bristle board, like a Strathmore bristle. I've written everything down because I knew you were going to ask this, so I got as specific as you want.
Yeah, no, I'm really into the specifics. Like, what kind of bristle board? What, you know, what's the number?
Yeah, I use a Strathmore bristle, and it's vellum. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I didn't write that down. I think it's 2-ply. I'm not sure.
That's all right. Yeah.
But there's a smooth finisher or a rougher finish. I like the rougher finish for some reason. It has a little tooth to it, but I've used both. And then I just, you know, I line out the board, you know, to the panels and everything, and draw right on there with a color erase blue or light blue pencil. You know, hand letter everything. Well, first I'll put the lettering in so that I know that I have enough space to put the drawing in. I may have to kind of adjust, you know, or maybe try to simplify the wording if it looks like I'm getting too wording. I'm not going to be able to fit the characters in.
You do that with blue, the blue pencil?
Yeah, I do it all in blue pencil, yeah. And then block out the characters, just like if I were storyboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I'll thumbnail I was going to call it a shot, like it was like it was a film, but if a panel has more detail in it than some other panel, and I'm looking at the staging and I want to get a background in there, I may have to sort of plan that out. And then after it's all penciled in and I have everything working, then I will ink the lettering in first, and I use like a marker pen. Actually, it's called a Copic multi-liner pen.
Yes, no, I'm familiar,
you know,
with those. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I've got some.
I just discovered these too. It was about, because I used to do the lettering with a number 2 speedball. I can't remember if that is that what it's called, speedball.
Yeah, speedball.
Dip it in, And I don't know, I could never get the consistency I wanted with the thickness of the lettering. And so recently I found these pens in Japantown in San Francisco. There's a bookstore there, Japanese bookstore, that has all kinds of art supplies for drawing manga, and I found these pens, and they've worked out really well, so I've been using those for a while. And so I'll make sure that the lettering works, and that I still have room for the drawing, you know, because a lot of times when you've roughed in the lettering and then you go over with a pen, you might, you know, the lettering might get a little bigger or go a little farther out or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
And yeah, yeah. So then once that's done, then I'll ink them with a brush. I use Black India ink, just no particular brand. What kind of brush? I thought I wrote it down here, and I can't remember. Oh, yeah, Winsor & Newton number 1 and number 2 for thicker lines.
Yeah.
And then I'll ink the borders, hand ink the borders, and when that dries, I'll fill in the blacks with just a black permanent Sharpie marker. And then, so once all that is finished, and you know, if there's something in there I might have to white out, or, you know, if I made a mistake or something, you know, fix that. Or sometimes I'll look at it and something didn't turn out right, and I'll completely redraw one of the characters. Like, oh, Molly doesn't look right. I don't like that expression. I might redraw it and paste it over. You know, just tape it right over, and then I'll scan the strips into the computer, put them in Photoshop, and basically just clean them up. Just get rid of the blue pencil line and make all the ink lines, you know, the levels adjusted so that they're dark and consistent, and then once that's all done, it's just basically putting them into the format that Comic Sherpa needs, which is, I think, 600 whatever wide.
Yeah.
And you can be as long as you want, but that's what their website requires, and I just put them up there and date them and hope people like them.
Yeah. Now, do you work, like, what size do you work at originally? What?
Yeah, you know, when I was working on US Acres, I got comfortable with that size, which was pretty big, and actually my own strips I drew big. So, but I've never found a size I'm completely comfortable with, so I go back and forth. I just measured off what I normally use, and for bigger strips that, or where there, I think there's going to be more detail and more background, or maybe the dad and the mom and bear are all going to be in it, and I have to draw a bed and the blankets and stuff, I'll usually draw those bigger, like 20 by 6.5 inches.
Yes, okay.
And I'll draw some of them smaller, 15.25 by 4.75, which is much smaller. So I go back and forth, and then I'll use like a thinner brush, and I'll just make the lettering smaller. And sometimes I'll even forget. A month later, I'll think I drew one at a bigger size, and I'll find the original. I'll think, oh, I drew that one really small. I didn't remember. I can't even tell on the web. So I know most cartoonists probably have one size, and they just stick with it. But depending on the mood or whatever. Like, sometimes for some reason I can go a couple of weeks and drawing small just feels really comfortable, and then suddenly that doesn't seem big enough and I can't get what I want, and it's nice to change it up for me, and I'll just draw it bigger and I can really get the panel kind of working better, and then I'll do that for like a month and I'll go, what am I doing? This is huge. It's taking me forever. I
can't
draw this smaller. And then I'll go back to smaller ones again. So I've never found a size that I can seem to stick to, but I figure if it all reduces about the same size, I can change it up as much as I want. So.
Oh, yeah. And I love the fact in some panels, let me see here. I'm looking at one right now. I think this was the most recent. This is the flashback in color, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've got, like, the dad's foot coming outside of the frame.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, that's really neat. It just really breaks it up a little bit, you know?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Oh, sometimes it might be a happy accident where I ran out of room, and then so I'll dust the panel to, you know, try to make it look nicely composed line. But, I like when other strips do that, like Calvin and Hobbes would, you know, he started out with 4 panels, and then the later ones he would do all kinds of neat things where sometimes it was just 1 panel, or, you know, he'd have all this white space and no panel around it, and it'd just be
right,
Calvin by himself, and I just love how visually it was always interesting and fun to look at. So, Yeah, I get bored if I keep doing it exactly the same. So whatever seems challenging or fun that day, I'll try to, you know, go with what just feels fun to draw.
Well, it's working. For the life of me, I cannot see why that this strip is not syndicated. I really can't. I mean, have you got any kind of, you said you did get some, you've had some feedback on and Sherpa?
Well, I did recently. There's a guy who has a strip on, it used to be on Sherpa, and it's on Go Comics now by Lucas Turnbloom, and it's called Imagine This. And he wrote me a while back, a couple months ago, and was really nice, gave me some nice compliments and everything. And he just recently got syndicated on Go Comics, so we kind of emailed back and forth, and he was telling me, you know, kind of, because I hadn't sent anything out for a long time, he thought, well, you should send this out, I think you might have a shot or whatever, was telling me which syndicates are looking for people and which weren't, and I said, have you submitted it to Universal? And I thought, well, do I need to submit it to them, because that's Comic Sherpa, because they look at the stuff, and the editors give picks and stuff. So I emailed the editor, and he said, "No, we're watching the strip. We're aware of it." And he said that he liked the artwork and liked the feature. So that was the only feedback I ever got from anyone from Sherpa, but that was good.
Yeah,
and it felt really good. He said, "Just keep drawing." So I don't know, you know, is there, know, what they're looking for as far as how long somebody. I know they're looking for stamina. I know that's something that I've been told by somebody that. They're looking for people who are consistent and keep it going, and because it's definitely a marathon. It's not a sprint, and,
right.
And not everybody can keep that up. And it is difficult with full time job and everything. And
yes.
Luckily, I had a big surplus because I'd been drawing Molly and the Bear for a while, which I've completely, you know, I'm way past that now. They've been all brand new for months, so. It's definitely hard to keep up, but the only feedback I got there from him. But recently I was really lucky. There's a website called Drawn that somehow they found out about it, and they mentioned it and put a couple up there with the link and everything, and gave me a really, really nice kind of little review. And this site, I guess, a friend of mine at work saw, and he said, "Oh, you're on Drawn," and it's like, "What's Drawn?" You know, I didn't even know about the site.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, it's an illustration site and cartooning site that people go to." And since then, the hits just went up on my strip like crazy, you know. And I picked up like doubled the subscribers, but I have no idea. You know, the hits were a lot for me, but I don't know if that's big. I have no idea what other people get. I don't know.
Right.
You know how many. Subscribers other people have, and you know how that plays in, but it's definitely grown a bit and gotten, you know, some nice mention through this site. There's been other cartoonists that have put my strip on their link on their website, you know, a few people, and Lucas has put it on there, and there's a guy who he does the strip Dog Eat Doug.
Oh, yes.
Site, and yeah. He put a mention up there, which was really nice, and sent me an email. So I don't know. I mean, who knows where it'll go? I try not to think about it because I want to just keep having fun and just enjoy the process and think, you know, at the very end of the day, if I get a self-published a book and it sells a few copies, you know, I'll be lucky and that'll be nice. I mean, I'm so lucky I have a full-time job where I actually draw or do something creative every day.
Yeah.
A lot of people trying to do a strip don't have it all, so I feel really fortunate and lucky that I have that, and the rest would be the icing on the cake. But it's like, be careful what you wish for, and you know, maybe there's not that much money in it, and it'd be really stressful to keep doing it for years. I don't know. So
yeah, but it's I mean, I guarantee you, you put out a book, I'm buying it. So you know,
okay, well, I'll send you a free copy. Yeah. you're the first person to contact me and want to interview me. So
oh, geez, well.
It's nice of you to do that.
I was excited. I was so excited when you replied back. And I don't know, you know, I think there was one point I reached out to you, I think just asking you about your process and how you did everything.
Yeah.
And I remember going back saying, you know, I really want to get Bob Scott on to, you know, to interview him. And I couldn't find, like, I went back to Sherpa. I said, there's no more email address in there. I'm like, what happened? I said, where did I get it? You know, I couldn't remember where I got it before, you know? So I'm, right. I'm digging through all my old emails, and I finally found it. I'm like, there it is, you know? God.
Okay. Oh, I'm glad you found it. Yeah, I go back and forth, and I'll turn the comments off, and then I'll shut them off, turn them on and off. I actually turned them off again recently, and not because I was getting anything bad. I was actually getting really nice compliments since it went on this Drawn website, but it was starting to stress me out in a weird way. I was, like, thinking too much about, like, oh, my God, there's pressure now, and there's people, more people reading it, and yep. I thought I need to go back to not thinking about that and just having fun.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
So I'll turn them off, and that was probably a period where I had them off for a little bit. And
yeah, but
there's no way to.
Well, if it's even possible, I always ask this question near the end, but if it's even possible to select, if you've got a project or a body of work that you're most fond of that you've thus far in your career, what is there one that immediately jumps out that, you know, and that could include anything? I mean, even, you know, your work at Pixar or.
Right, you know. Yeah. You know, as far as like animated films I've worked on, if I'm thinking of those, Incredibles is one that I'm so happy I got to work on. I feel so lucky. Because I just think Brad Bird is just a genius. I mean, the guy is this incredible director, and everything he does is really, really well done and well thought out. I learned so much storyboarding on that film. That one, I'm really happy that I got to work on that and feel really lucky, especially since I had moved up to Pixar, and he had done Iron Giant, and he was going to do another project at that time down there at Warner Brothers. And I remember, like, he wanted me to work on whatever that project was going to be, and I interviewed and everything, and I thought, boy, if I don't take this, I'll never get to work with Brad Bird if I go up to Pixar. It was really between whether I was going to stay down there in L.A. and continue to work at different studios or come to Pixar. And after a year at Pixar, he was coming up to Pixar to do The Incredibles. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I feel really lucky that he was there. I was at the right place at the right time. And then, you know, one of my best friends, Tony Fucilli, came up, and I knew him since CalArts. And he's just one of the most amazing designers, animators ever. You know, I mean, it's just the guy is just a genius. And so I was just really happy to work on that. Felt really, really lucky. And I just love the story that Brad came up with. And everything. So that would be one that really sticks out.
That's a great one, yeah.
There was an animated film called Cats Don't Dance that I was really happy I got to work on. That's not very big, didn't make a lot of money, but it was done for, I was at Turner Films at the time, Turner Animation. Ted Turner had bought Hanna-Barbera and started Turner Films, and one of the first films he did was called The Pagemaster, which I ended up working on that, but the one after that was Cats Don't Dance, and Mark Dindal directed that. He ended up directing Emperor's New Groove at Disney, and it was a really fun, cartoony film that I got to co-supervise with Jay Jackson on a character named Danny. I got to animate a lot of different characters and help design characters, and that was just fun because it was old-style, cartoony animation, you know. So those are the two that really stick out as being the most fun I got to work on, and ones that I thought, you know, just had a good time working on.
That's great. Yeah. You know, the biggest disappointment for me with Incredibles is that you can't, I mean, I'm still sore over this. I'm like, I keep telling my wife, I said, you know, I so bad wanted to see the sequel with The Underminer, and now there's like nothing. I've heard nothing. You know, it's like, was that just a tease? Is it ever going to happen? Right. You know, it's like, God, you know.
I actually have no idea. I don't know. But,
That was
Toy Story 3 is in the works, so I know that one is being done.
yeah. No, so that was great. That's great.
Yeah. So I just feel really lucky that I got to work on those. And,
that's great. So where do you I guess the closing question would be, where do you see yourself in, you know, in the future in like 10 years? Where do you see Bob Scott?
Boy, I have no idea. it's funny. I never knew I would be at Pixar, and certainly not as long as I've been there, because, you know, it's down in L.A., you don't really stay at, or at least I hadn't stayed at a studio for very long. I think my record was 4.5 years at Turner. Everywhere else, it was like picture to picture, and, you know, people tend to jump around. So it's so hard to predict. I assume I'll still be animating. I'll probably still be an animator, unless I get really lucky and somebody wants to syndicate me and I win the cartooning lottery or something.
Yeah.
I probably will still be in animation. But, yeah, I don't know. I'd love to keep doing comic strips. I'd love to, you know, self-publish one of the books. I'd love to be syndicated if that would ever work out and was something I could do, you know, make hopefully enough money at. The hard part would be to continue to do both things. I mean, it's definitely a lot of work doing a strip on the side. I mean, and I've kind of my own worst enemy because I, you know, sometimes I think, oh, I had another idea for a strip that I drew for years and tried to get syndicated with these two little alien characters. And it was much simpler to draw and, you know, much simpler kind of graphic style. Mm-hmm. And here I've done Molly and the Bear where I've kind of challenged myself and tried to put a lot into the different panels. And, you know, some strips are simpler than others, but, you know, it'd be a lot easier if I tried to do something simpler. You know, it'd be easier to draw at night, but yeah, it's definitely a lot of work, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad because I you know, I want to continue to see it. I mean, it's awesome. That's great to look at, and I can tell you enjoy it just by, you know, you can just tell.
Oh, good. Oh, you know, good. I hope so.
Yeah, it's great. It's great stuff, and I see that in the future. Either I see it in a TV, or I see it, you know, whatever the medium's going to be for syndicated strips, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know how that's going to be, I'll be looking at Kindles or something like that. I don't know, but, yeah. So that's
it's
great.
It's so different now when I think of newspapers and that comic strips used to sell the newspaper. I mean, you know, when I was in Michigan, we had the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press, and Garfield was in the Free Press, I think, and the Detroit News had Peanuts or I don't know what, you know, but the papers had different comic strips. And that's if you, you know, the comics kind of sold the paper. If you move to a town, you might go, well, I like Peanuts, so I'll get the Detroit Free Press.
Right, right.
You know, and then you get hooked on that paper. And now, it doesn't matter what paper you buy because, or if you get a paper at all, because you can read any comic strip for free. So
yep.
It's interesting, you know, how that's changed so much. This one thing that used to be such a selling point is now offered for free. So.
Yep. I know it. It's.
Yeah.
I guess we'll all sit back and watch and see where it goes.
But, yeah, it'll be interesting. But it's exciting, too, because change is also good, I guess. You know,
yeah.
You know.
Yep.
There's a lot you can find out there that you couldn't find before. I mean, I love the fact that you can just look up whatever your interest is. You're like, I want to read about Charles Schulz. And you just look him up on the Internet, and there's articles and there's interviews. You go to YouTube, and there was an interview with Charles Schulz I watched the other day. From the 60s, where he's describing how he does the strip and comes up with ideas. I thought, wow, this is amazing.
I know. You're right. That I think, is the best part of it. It's great. I mean, there's videos of on YouTube of Walter Lantz and how he did Andy Panda and Woody Woodpecker, you know. It's just so cool, that stuff.
It really is. And as an artist, too, it's just been a godsend for... you know, you don't have to have a morgue anymore. I mean, I read Hank Ketcham's biography, and he talked about, you know, collecting magazines and you know, he'd have the Sears catalog, so he'd have clothing and reference for everything. He was the best at being accurate with everything. I mean, he would even take a drive out to a gas station if he needed to draw a gas pump. And now it's like, it's just great. It's like, oh, I need to draw a fireman, and you know, you just look it up. There's a photograph of a real fireman, and it's like, now I can draw the uniform, you know, and caricature it the way I want to. But it's like, it I feel like it just makes it so much easier, and I almost don't have an excuse to not try to draw it accurately.
Yeah, I know. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Well, I appreciate you taking all this time. It's been great talking to you. I just, you know. Just thrilled that you were able to share some time.
Oh, my pleasure. It was great talking to you, Todd.
All right. Well, take care.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks again for listening. That concludes the interview with Bob Scott. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. For further information, you want to see some supporting photos corresponding with the blog, first go to the blog. Obviously, you're there if you're listening to this podcast. That is www.boing.libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com. That's where this podcast is hosted, and all the files are located here. For all the photographs and supporting images and all that kind of good stuff, go to the sister site at www.behindthelinespodcast.blogspot.com. Or just type in behindthelinespodcast.blogspot.com. Over there you'll find all the supporting photos and a picture of Bob Scott as well as my other guests from previous podcasts. If you want to check out Molly and the Bear, which I highly recommend that you do, go to www.comicssherpa.com. Yes, there's two consecutive S's there, comics and then Sherpa, S-H-E-R-P-A.com. Folks, you won't regret it. Molly and the Bear is awesome. Thanks again now for joining me today. It was a great time with Bob, and hopefully you'll be back to listen in on podcast, the Boing podcast number 4. Coming up with a surprise guest all the way from the Czech Republic. I'm hoping to get him on very, very soon so we can get this number 4 podcast underway like within the next few weeks, but we'll see. And then after that, maybe I'll just do some more rambling for a few more podcasts. Of course, that will probably bore you to tears. But I'll have some more interviews coming up as well. Thanks again for listening. Have a great, great day.